what we would like to do now is really have a conversation and hear what this looks like as a church, as you're doing this work, as you're thinking about how do we as a congregation actually express these things in a way that is authentic and responsive to who we individually are as a body in that congregation. And so I want to turn it over to Drew now and just start, Drew, with the question of what are you doing in your church? How does this look and how are you living being stewards?
When I was invited to be a part of this morning's presentation, I really said I'd love to share a case study, and I'm going to get there in just a minute. In 2010, I was with a group of clergy colleagues when I was serving the First Presbyterian Church in Birmingham, Alabama. And we had been part of a study together over 3 years of looking at faith and money in our lives as Christians. And we said we need to do this on a personal level. So we did a lot of work about our own personal understanding of stewardship and finances, but then also talking about how do we do that in our own congregations. And we were a group of Episcopalian, Methodist, and Presbyterian clergy, and we had the opportunity to travel together to have conversations with the mother churches of all of our churches. So we were in the UK speaking with folks from the Church of England, the Church of Scotland, and we were on a train from London to Edinburgh. I was reading this article from the Scotsman paper, and there's an article in this paper that's titled Grand Designs, and it's about a couple who are architects, and they had acquired a home, and they had taken on the restoration of this home. When I was reading the article, one of the things that really stood out to me was a quote from Kristen about the home. And I want to read this. She said, "People neglect them and don't value them. When you live in a place like this, you are only ever a tenant. You never own them. You look after them and you do your best for them, and then you move on. And hopefully other people will take them on and enjoy them as much as you have." And I was on that train ride and I read that and I thought, what a beautiful statement. And I think about that's what it's like for our life being in the church. And it struck me then, and that's why I've saved this paper, you know, we never own the church. We don't own any of the churches that we inhabit. We look after them and we do our best for them. And when we move on, hopefully other people will take them on and enjoy them as much as we have. But I love how she says, you know, we're called to enjoy these places. And we share that and we invite other people then to enjoy them after us. And I really do think that's what stewardship is all about. And I was thinking as I was preparing for this morning, I've really been fully a part of 5 different churches in my lifetime. I was born into the First Presbyterian Church of Selma, Alabama. And I looked back preparing for this morning, all these dates. That church was organized in 1838. And the building the church inhabits was built in 1893 and 1894. Then I had the opportunity to serve as a young adult volunteer and then a long-term mission volunteer with the Presbyterian Church. And I was actually on the pastoral team of the Anglican Cathedral in Buenos Aires, the Anglican Cathedral of San Juan Bautista. The church, the cathedral there was built in 1831. I saw Shannon Webster had to duck out. He and I had the opportunity to serve together at the First Presbyterian Church of Birmingham, Alabama. And the sanctuary there was built in 1888. I moved here to New Mexico in 2011 to serve Las Placitas Presbyterian Church first, and that congregation was started in 1894, and the building was built over a number of years. The building we know now was started in 1930, and the large sanctuary they worship now was built in 1984. And then I was called 3 years ago, it was in May, that I began in 2019 at Emmanuel Presbyterian Church. It was built between 1950 and 1956. So Emmanuel's the youngest of the congregations that I've ever served and been a part of. And I've often said one of the things that I love about serving churches that are older and that have a history is there's a gravitas. There's a story in all of our churches, no matter what age they are. All of our churches have a story, and we all have a place to which we pertain. And that's part of what I want to invite us to think about this morning as we talk about stewardship in our congregations. And I'll do some case study with what we're up to at Emmanuel these days. But before I do that, I enjoyed reading about Lamb's House in Edinburgh. And the house, this is interesting to think about our churches and the neighborhoods. The house was in a part of the city at the time that was really in decline. And the house was in danger of being split up and not being preserved. And this couple took on this one house, and it became a real energy driver for a renovation of that whole area. So just starting where you are and beginning to rekindle energy. And she talked, the word that she's used more recently that I found talking about their work and their and they live in this place and they work in this place, Lamb's House. She talked of their role as to be one of, as custodians, a custodian. And I was thinking about in our churches, you know, usually or in our schools, we think of the custodian as the janitorial staff. And honestly, it's not a role that is honored very much. And it's one of the most important roles. We all depend upon the work of the custodians. And I love to think of that in terms of stewardship, because custodian is somebody who cares for and looks after something. And that's the role we've been given in the church, is to really care for and look after the communities that we serve. So we are all custodians in our churches, if we can think of that as a role of our stewardship. So at Emmanuel, when I was asked to come and serve the congregation, I had the gift of being in a place in my life and there being in a place in their lives to be open up. I said, look, if what you're feeling called to do is the status quo, I respect that, and that's not me. But if you're willing to think outside the box and do something different, that's a conversation I could engage in. And so the congregation at Emmanuel and I began this journey together. And I spent the first months of my time at Emmanuel just listening. And I was listening to the congregation. I was going out into the community around the congregation and the neighborhood associations and getting to know the people around us and just listening there. I've told people, if folks would have watched me, they probably would have gone, what is he up to? I spent a lot of time walking around that building, just listening to the building and trying to understand what was the energy and the story there. But as many of you know, and the folks at Emmanuel know well, and that's part of why they called me there, is there was so much underutilized space. And there's so many congregations, even churches that have smaller buildings. If you think about how often the space in your church gets used, I mean, literally just think, divide up the days of the week and the hours of the day, and how much of your space is really utilized fully. And to think about your congregations, and what we're trying to do to Emmanuel is to think about our congregation, is how might we share the resources and the gifts that we have in our community in new ways. And that's stewardship. We were lucky enough, Gene, who left, and Mark Snell and I traveled in the fall of 2019 up to Philadelphia, and we met with an organization called Partners for Sacred Places, who since we've been working with over the last 3 years, and I see some nods here, other folks, partners have worked with the folks at First Santa Fe, as well. And I want to share a little bit of our experience. They have a concentration of congregations they've worked with in the Philadelphia area because that's where their offices are, but they've worked all around the country. And the main piece that I want to talk about this morning of the work that they did, that we've done with them, is focused on asset-based community development. It's a term that many of you may be familiar with. Some of you probably know that work better than I do. It's not a new piece, but ABCD, asset-based community development. I'm going to come back to more definition on that, but I wanted to read out, and I'm thankful I've got a couple of manual folks here. They gave us a bullet point list of six pieces that we started working on together in the proposal. And I'm thrilled to say over 3 years, we've actually done a lot of this. We're not done with it. It's not complete, but a lot has happened. And one of the things that, and I would encourage you when you go back to your congregations from today, one of the things we began to talk about earlier and said, look, we can talk about these things, but we need to do something. We Presbyterians are really good about sitting around and talking about things for a long time, but to begin to take whatever small steps you can take together. But when we started working with partners, they said, what we're going to work on together, and I'm reading these from this list of bullet points they gave us, was to build the internal capacity of the congregation to tell its story. So each of your congregations have a story. So build the internal capacity of the congregation to tell its story. And then the second piece of that, and to make a case for its civic value to the wider community. A lot of what Partners works with our congregations on is to really look at how we're an asset to the wider community. What's the civic value of our space in the community? All of our churches are public spaces. They're places where many parts of the public life in our communities can interact. And it's a real gift to our communities to have these places. And one of the things that we've been trying to do at Emmanuel is to really revalue ourselves internally. What does that gift look like? And then how do we share it? The second point they said is we want to help you connect with stakeholders and leaders in order to strengthen relationships. So it's helping to build relationships with other stakeholders and leaders in your community and identify opportunities to maximize the value of your historic campus, your place, your church. How do you maximize the value of that in your community? Develop a community-informed approach. Community-informed approach. So this is really about what is our place in the community, and that stewardship, a design that will allow the church buildings to adapt. So we need to change. But to allow the buildings to adapt and accommodate a range of new uses and purposes in partnership with community and civic institutions. A lot of the language that we talk about that I've learned with partners is a sacred place in a civic space. How do we share our congregational assets in our communities with partners? And that I want to lift that up with our community partners, because what I've learned, and I'm learning all the time as we're doing this work together at Emmanuel, is we had a lot of what I've come to call building users that weren't necessarily community partners. And that's a really, and so this relationship is how do we develop partnerships and not just have people who are using our building, but we're building relationships in our communities. And all of our churches sit in a particular community. What I loved about Partners when we went to Philadelphia together is the churches we saw that they worked with, there wasn't a cookie cutter model. They were all different because the congregations were different. Their communities were different. And what I would encourage here in the Presbytery of Santa Fe, all of the churches that we're a part of are unique and sit in a unique context. So I'm not trying to propose that we all do what Emmanuel's doing. Do what is your church being called to do in your place? The fourth point they said, we want to help raise the visibility and energize the larger community about the value of Emmanuel Presbyterian Church as a civic asset. And so we've been working really hard in the community over these last years to really show the value of this church to the wider community. And now we have the neighborhood saying, we love what you're doing in the neighborhood. And we want to make sure that we can help support what you're doing because we see the value, whether the people have Nob Hill, where we are in Albuquerque, is not a highly religious community. People aren't beating down the doors on Sunday morning to fill the church. And so it's how do we help people to understand that this church in our neighborhood is valuable to us, whether what we're going there for is worship or not. I often say to the folks of Emmanuel, I said, let's be that type of, it's almost like a monastic community. I say, let's keep the rhythm of prayer and praise going here. It's keeping a congregation vital. That is, we are a gift to the community in that. And we open up the church as a greater civic asset. They say we want to help develop the clarity and vision for the long-term sustainable use of the church's property, building on conversations with key regional civic leaders and institutions. So we have, Carol, I'm thrilled that you're here this morning. Carol Pierce works for the city of Albuquerque. And we've had, you know, incredible leadership. I'm thankful for the city having engaged with us and neighborhood folks and school folks and business folks and development folks and other congregations. We've been inviting these people in to really develop a long-term sustainable vision for the use of the church. We may be inhabiting like a third of the space of the building and sharing two-thirds of what we have with community partners. And I want to give kudos to the Emmanuel congregation and shout out to Sharon and Mark who are here for their courage to be willing to say, yeah, we could do this different. We don't have to do this the way we've always done it. And sustainable is important. In our case, what we entered in this conversation together, it's not sustainable. Our church has a little over 100 members and we have a building that's 35,000 square feet. It's not sustainable for us to continue to use the building in the way that we were. And what I loved when we did a recent design charrette, there was one of our neighboring neighborhood association presidents who's a landscape architect. He said, you know, the most sustainable buildings, he said, the most sustainable use is to use an existing building. He said, the building is already there. So if you can find ways to repurpose it and reuse it, that's the most sustainable architecture you can think about today. And here we have these assets that aren't being utilized oftentimes in their fullest sense. And the final point they said is we want to incorporate stakeholders and friends and supporters in an actionable roadmap for the future of Emmanuel Presbyterian Church. So all of a sudden we have all these partners. It's not all of a sudden, it's actually been 3 years of a lot of hard work together, but we've built these partnerships and now we have all these friends from across the community who want to be a part of what we're doing. And it's through sharing the resources we have. And that's stewardship. It really is a different way of thinking about stewardship. So I have to say this with our finance chair here, we need to find ways to fund what we're doing, but we can think outside the box of how we do that. And so it really, what's working for us at Emmanuel is to build on this sacred place, civic space model of how do we really share the resources we have. And let me say this right now, I'm not proposing that we all go out and work with partners for sacred places. They've been a great partner for us. The Presbyterian Foundation has lots of resources and they're available to us as well. What I hope is that, and I love this, that the Church at Emmanuel, the congregation has been saying, we hope we can share some of our learnings with other churches. And this is us beginning to do that here. But I hope that some of the ideas are transferable. Again, not doing what we're doing, but as a process of how you can engage with the community and really help to understand that our churches really are a civic asset. The first work was helping us as a church to understand that. And I'll say as a pastor, I've learned to really value Emmanuel as a civic asset in ways that I didn't before. And so often what I've said many times is we think about church with a small O, like this is our church. And what I've tried to say is let's think about our church in a much wider sense. How do we really understand our churches in that way?
And I think what you just said was super important, going from the small O to the big O. And that was the question, the first question I was going to ask is, it sounds like you're doing a lot of some really big things in Emmanuel. So how do you get past or live within some of that tension of but this is my church, and I'm very comfortable with, you know, how things are and how things feel. Being able to move through that to a place of more of that abundant sharing, and feeling ready for change that to be fair, like, is uncomfortable for all of us, but we have to do it. How can we do it in a way that we honor the discomfort and accept it?
Can I ask, Sharon, can you respond here's our clerk of session from Emmanuel.
Well, the first thing we did was get together the congregation, and we met a couple times to talk about what it might mean if we moved from our big, beautiful sanctuary into the original church, the original part of the church. And that was just one of the things that we talked about. But I think engaging conversation with the congregation was really important, you know, to get a lot of, you know, feelings, concerns, what would this look like, and so on. And so that was really big. And fortunately, the congregation felt brave. You know, they were brave, you know, and this happened pre-pandemic. This happened in the summer, or maybe the fall of 2019. And then we had the pandemic. And so then we lived with Zoom church and so on. And we look at ourselves, we come back and we see that maybe all these spaces are not as important to us, because we have been able to worship in other ways. We have been able to be congregation, we were, you know, in other ways. And so, you know, and not only that, but we also brought in community partners as one of the first parts of what we did. And we happened to, after doing that, was able to introduce us to the Philharmonic. And then, you know, things kind of came from there. But to answer your questions, Maggie, I guess it was, you know, the congregation was brave and willing to think outside the box and think about maybe a different possibility for us. And then the session met, and there again, too, you know, they were willing to say, well, maybe we could reconfigure our sanctuary in a different way, you know, as we started opening up space for the Philharmonic to come in.
Yeah, and let me add to that. Thank you, Sharon. That's great. And the three questions in those early conversations we asked, we started with, what would you lose? Mm-hmm. What would we lose by changing this? I think it's important to name and grieve the loss. And some of the folks in Emmanuel said, we feel like we'd be a failure. We feel like we lose the space where we've done all these pieces. So just don't be afraid to have the hard conversations. In fact, starting there is important, because if we try to gloss over that, I think we really set ourselves up for failure. So name what we lose. Then we said, but what would we gain? What would be the benefit of opening up and having change? And somebody at one of those conversations said, you know, it'd almost be like we'd be a new church. And people began to catch a vision that there's something new we could do here. And then we did begin to dream together and said, well, what could it look like? We weren't trying to, you know, do architectural plans at that point, but it was to begin to imagine, to engage. We say that, you know, to serve the people with energy, intelligence, imagination, and love, it's using your imagination to begin to say, what could it look like? Mm-hmm. And there's things, we've made some mistakes along the way, and you learn as you go and do that, but it's just, and I think it's really important to get the ball rolling. You have to take some action. Let me say another thing that I learned as a pastor that was hard for me to learn. You know, we sing comfort, comfort you, my people. And we try to be really comfortable. To do this type of change, there has to be a discernible level of discomfort.
Right.
So don't be afraid of the discomfort, because if you try to make it all comfortable, the change is not going to happen. So having, learning to tolerate a bit of discomfort. And as a pastor, I wanted to say, what's going to be all right? And I, actually what I, and Mark and Sharon are probably laugh. I've learned to say, I don't know what this is going to look like. As opposed to saying, don't worry about it, we got this. Because I don't know. And I said, we may not make it, but we're going to try. So having some, I think, to tolerate some discomfort in the change is really helpful.
Yeah, that reminds me of a quote that I love that is, the opportunity for growth lives at the off-ramp of my comfort zone.
Right.
Yeah, right. Could I add something to that?
Please, Mark. Yeah, do.
I will actually go back earlier because I think this is an important point. We tried to come up with a process several years ago that really sort of navigated some of this space, but it was really a whole bunch of amateurs here trying to look at it. But one thing we had decided as a church at that point was between two options. One option was to let the church gracefully go into the sunset the way they were. And the other option was to engage in some sort of mission, which from our point, I think Sharon may have some comments on this too, but from our position, it was we wanted to have a mission in the community. Okay, so there was a basic agreement in the congregation that we needed to, we couldn't just close down the building. There was close to a consensus on that, I think. Now, I think the thing that has always been a tension, which I'll bring up here, is the moment you start focusing on a mission, the question is whether you lose the compassion that you need to have and the love that you have inside your congregation. You're so busy on solving a problem that you forget who your people are. So I think this is an important second part to remember. We can't become so much of a development organization for our community that we forget we have a spiritual responsibility.
Thank you, Mark. Let me, a couple of these data points I wanted to share. Partners has done research around the country. One of the first studies was called Sacred Places at Risk. Does anybody know about a sacred place at risk in their community? Ours was. And what they found is that building use across the week in most of our congregations, the building use that involved members was 19% of the activity in the church. And 81% of the use of the majority of our churches was actually non-members. 19% of the activity in many of our congregations is the small O that we were talking about, and 81% is that big O. So already we were doing that. And they looked at the community programs of our church and who were the beneficiaries of those programs, of programs that happened in our churches, and members of our churches, 13% of the beneficiaries were the members of our churches, and 87% of the community programs that happen in our churches already serve people outside of our churches. So these are realities that are already at play in our congregations, and you can think about the different types of programs or missions or things that happen in and around your churches that you're involved in. And I would say that's part of the stewardship, the sharing of the resources that we've been given. I said I'd come back to the asset-based community development. Let me just share quickly a few principles. But basically, in the asset-based community development model, they said we so often fall into an understanding of a cycle of scarcity. And I think you'll understand this in our churches. We say we have less money to support the congregation and the minister we're involved in. So then when we get into this place where we begin to kind of hunker down and protect our resources, and money starts to seem scarce, and so then we feel like we have less resources, then you get in this just spin cycle of scarcity, which is the antithesis of what we're talking about in stewardship. And in community asset-based community development, they talk about really a cycle of abundance, where we're looking at how do we share the larger blessings that we have in the community. And then we move from there to sharing the gifts that we have in action with others, partners in our community. We start seeing an abundance of gifts, and then the sharing cycle that is based in a cycle of abundance as opposed to a cycle of scarcity. And I always say, when I think about stewardship, we don't worship a stingy God. I mean, we live in this cycle of abundance. So it's really beginning to embrace that in our congregations, and it challenges the traditional way that we look at our churches and our communities. We look at, oh, well, we don't have enough members, or we don't have the youth we had anymore, or we don't have, I mean, you can just write the list. I mean, all the things that we don't have. And we do that in our communities as well. We look at the unemployment, the addiction, the poverty, the literacy, the vandalism. And so we get in this whole mindset that's a pretty traditional approach at looking at, well, what are the community, we look for the problem. What is it that our community doesn't have? And so we begin really starting out of a place of deficiency. And where that takes us next is that we need somebody outside of us to fix us, because we don't have the resources. So we're looking outside of ourselves. So we're looking to a different agency, and then we just become consumers of services. And the asset-based community development approach is really to say, well, what are the resources that we do have? And we started at Emmanuel saying, what are the resources we have as a congregation? In our case, one of the largest resources we have is space. And then you go out to your community and you say, what are the businesses that are around us? What are the schools? What parks? What other churches? What community groups? What educational? Who are the artists? Who are the young people? Who are the older people? You know, where are the gardens? What are the histories and stories that are all part of our communities? So you really start with, what are the assets that are present? Not focusing on what's absent, not focusing on what we don't have. And it's really focused internally. And this isn't, I don't mean in a way like looking at our belly buttons, but you really saying, what are the gifts and the talents here? And we started with our congregation saying, what are the gifts and the talents that we have? And then we started having those conversations with our partners and our neighbors, because it really is driven by relationships. And we, I mean, churches, we know we're built on relationships and community. And the short piece of asset-based community development, I'll read this quote, says that sustainable development involves processes that constantly create connections among all these resources. So really, you're trying to connect the dots within your church and within your community, and it harnesses the collective power of our communities that really creates a new vision for the future.
But now all of a sudden, we're at a point of, we're trying to build a partnership where the Philharmonic will be fully in-house and will really have their home base, just as the congregation does at Emmanuel, and will be a hub for activity, a sacred place in a civic space in the heart of Nob Hill. And again, I'm not trying to propose that you do that in your places, but find what it is, you know, what I would encourage is, what it is in your community. I know some of your churches are already doing this. I'm looking at Covenant has a Dene language learning school that's come into their building. And I'm like, what a great resource. And that, you know, came together for space that they had and an asset in the community that was teaching language to children after so many Dene elders were lost in the COVID pandemic. And they needed, so there's, how do we take all of these assets and put those pieces together? Having heard this, let me share this quote again from Kristen Hannah's daughter about this Lamb's House and their work there in Edinburgh. And now that you have the framework, please do think about this as your church, the congregation that you have been called to be a part of right now. People neglect them and don't value them. When you live in a place like this, you are only ever a tenant. You never own them. You look after them and you do your best for them. And then you move on. And hopefully other people will take them on and enjoy them as much as you have. Amen. I've had the gift of working with some amazing colleagues over the years, and I'm really grateful for those relationships. And one of those was the head of staff at First Presbyterian Church in Birmingham, Alabama, Eugenia Gamble, who's been a real leader in stewardship over the years. And we became friends and colleagues. And I learned this blessing from her that she learned from a Franciscan sister as a Franciscan blessing, and I've loved to share it over the years as much because I learn from it every time, and I found congregations enjoy it as well. So I hope this is meaningful, and I thank Eugenia for all she's done for the church. May God bless you with discomfort at easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that you will live deeply and from the heart. And may God bless you with anger at injustice, oppression, and the exploitation of people in the earth, so that you will work for justice, freedom, and peace. And may God bless you with tears to shed for all those who mourn, so that you will reach your hand out to them and turn their mourning into joy. And may God bless you with just enough foolishness to believe that you can make a difference in this world, so that you'll be about doing those things that others say cannot be done. And as you go into this beautiful day, know that the love of God, the grace that comes to us through Jesus Christ, and the communion and the power of the Holy Spirit are with us and within us this holy day and forever. Amen. Mm-hmm.